This is Glenn Fleischman, the editor of Wi-Fi Networking News. Welcome to podcast number 17. It was recorded on August 29th, 2006. And today I'm talking to Alan Cohen, the Senior Director of Mobility Solutions at Cisco. Alan and I are going to talk about a wide range of subjects having to do with the applications and deployment of wireless technology of all kinds, not just Wi-Fi, but many different kinds. Welcome, Alan.
Oh, thanks, Glenn. Great to be here.
And we talked in the past because you came to Cisco through its acquisition of Airspace, which was one of the biggest independent wireless LAN switch vendors. And I used to cover the enterprise market much more closely, but now things have kind of moved into this this combination of things. Like the mobility market is a combination of the enterprise market and the consumer market. There's a lot of overlap, and the concerns for mobile workers and companies managing mobile workers do have some parallels for how individuals are going to be interacting with data and applications over wireless networks in the future, too, it seems to me.
Well, you know, so I'll give you one kind of opening concept here that might be useful, and I call it the idea of the mobility generation, right? People like us learned, oh, certainly I did, you live in Seattle, I learned Microsoft as a second language, right? I didn't grow up as a child using, you know, computing applications, right? The primary application that we use on any network were phones. And if you look at what's happening right now, in the marketplaces, we're seeing kind of a generation of young people who are now starting to hit the workforce who have really kind of grown up on cell phones and text messaging and IM and computing and email and web pages and podcasts and very Web 2.0. So, you know, there's a very broad range of capabilities that people are taking advantage of, and people are taking advantage of natively. And I think that's very, very important when you think about how wireless networks get built out.
Well, isn't this how technology gets sucked into companies too these days? As it used to be, it was a very management directed, CIO directed, IT directed thing. We're going to deploy X, and we're going to give you, install this on your laptop, give you this piece of equipment, and so forth. And then when Wi-Fi happened, you started having this pull of devices in, or the Palm, the original Palm Pilot, various kinds of synchronization software. You started having employees who were savvy. Maybe they were out of college or they were early adopters. They'd come in and they'd bring this technology in, and suddenly the company has to have a policy about managing mobile data, about managing Wi-Fi in the office, all these, you know, intrusion detection, which I know is one of your concerns at Airspace, is one of the, the tools there. When you have this mobile-centric generation coming up, is that going to change what expectations are in companies? You'll have these very savvy kids.
Well, it's a good question, Glenn. I mean, I think companies actually have to move rapidly to address these changes. So I worked at Cisco the first part of my career when we acquired Aeronet, which was the predecessor wireless LAN company.
Oh, yeah. One of the very,
and
very first ones.
Very, very cool and great technology and all that's still at work. But the interesting thing is we got an email from Cisco CIO, Pete Salvik, saying, don't plug this into the network. It's not secure. What people like I did is I threw a sweater over it because, I mean, I wanted to work in the conference room. And so, you know, I was definitely can I say this on a podcast, but I'm certainly one of myself and others.
Hey, so you're later you were a killjoy later because you developed intrusion technology to prevent other people from doing it.
Well, unfortunately for Pete and the CIO and the team here, they actually had to write their own tools to shut down rogues, right, and until it became standardized. But because at the end of the day, you couldn't prevent people from wanting to communicate in a mobile environment, right? And, you know, there's that unpretty side of people crawling around on the floor of a conference room looking for an Ethernet port, and they would fill up. And, you know, so people started to bring this type of technology. Interestingly, you know, we've seen this pervasively roll out. And, you know, just a couple of years ago, we were dealing with university customers that we then had to provide tools such as access control lists so that people couldn't IM in the middle of exams. So inevitably, technology will make its way. If it's useful, what did Jeff Goldblum say in Jurassic Park? Like, nature will find a way.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's always going to flow to the lowest energy value, whatever you're doing.
That's exactly right.
So whatever's easiest, some combination of Occam's razor and Wi-Fi or something like that.
So I think that's what's going to happen. So inevitably, technology is very pervasively rolled out in the consumer marketplace because of increasing, you know, because of Moore's law and also kind of the long tail of distribution, where you can get things into people's hands, certainly digital products, software products like IM, which are kind of mobility enablers. And you know, inevitably, those things make their way into the workforce, and, you know, progressive companies kind of get in front of it and take advantage of it, and they use it early, or others kind of spend their time fighting it until they kind of give in.
Well, in this previous generation we're talking about is things that wound up in the enterprise. They went into the office. People were using them there or communicating between home and their office computers, maybe over a VPN, but using some of this technology for synchronization. So this generation is now the mobile generation. These devices are all going to be out and about trying to communicate back to corporate enterprises or trying to access resources that are available on mobile networks. So that seems to raise the expectation, and this is sort of the core of what we'll talk about too, is raise the expectation that any kind of resource I might find in an enterprise in a high-speed Wi-Fi network, I might also be able to find in some form as I am roaming about a city or about a country. Is that the expectation that's now being set, that there's going to be this incredibly large-scale network accessibility for all these mobile services that previously would be confined to enterprise use?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, the greatest example of this is kind of the emergence of the metro mesh opportunity, right? And what we've really effectively done is, you know, on one hand, we've taken a lot of technology in the enterprise to secure wireless networks, effectively put the walls back up in your building. Then you take the same technology out into the public access environment, and what we've done is we've unwired everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you have these corollary forces that are pushing against each other, but they're actually very complementary. So, you know, increasingly there'll be an expectation that you don't need to be near an access point, that in fact, really your environment will be your access point. And that's effectively what mesh technology does and allows you to really gain access to a family of applications no matter where you're at. What's exciting about the mesh opportunity, however, is that if you look at the advances in Wi-Fi technology areas in the areas, for example, of location, identity, or presence-based services, increasingly, instead of just being an access technology, it's actually part of the services and applications environment. And the best example of that is location-based services. Knowing who you are and where you are, I can then serve up information that's relevant to you or the locale that you're in. And we have a great example. We did this with the Swedish subway system with a company called Peer Networks, where based on what set of tracks or what station or what area it is, the information system will then serve up to the workers on the subway the relevant information on where the wiring is,
mm-hmm.
or kind of recent repair records. And I think, you know, that's an extreme example, you know, you might see for municipal workers, but you will see people are going to be walking in downtown Dayton, Ohio, right, on a mesh network, and they're going to be served up ads over time for people, right, as you had. Now, you're probably not going to be walking around with your laptop unless you want to fall down and hurt yourself, but you might be using your Sony Milo, right, and that's a great crossover device if you haven't seen it, right? Kind of think about the Game Boy meets the PDA.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the Milo, especially because of the mobile generation that you're talking about, where if you spend most of your time on a college campus that has Wi-Fi pervasively available, and you go to your dorm room or apartment and you've got Wi-Fi there, and you go home and there's Wi-Fi, there are relatively few areas where you would need a cell phone. Or, and Sony could, of course, add cell technology to it later, but the Milo will provide, you know, Skype services and instant messaging and web access wherever there's Wi-Fi that you have access to. And that seems like the ideal kind of next generation appliance. It has
an interface that kids are used to, right, which is the Game Boy interface.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I'm a comparative stumbler on digital video games, but, you know, my son is a champion, right? He doesn't understand why my laptop and my desktop doesn't have the same kind of joysticks and mice. He thinks it takes too long to get around on a laptop.
Well, that means the next generation.
And he wants
will.
To carry his stuff around, and you know, mm-hmm. so the you know your laptop's a great device, and but it doesn't fit in your back pocket. Now, awkward to go out socially with it, but it isn't really hard to stick, you know, a good device like that in your coat.
But this is a great segue into talking about applications too. Is, I mean, we've got, you know, there's applications that you need available to you that are dependent on the kind of computing device you might have access to, and then there's the application that you need and you can't get a computing device that you want. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the classic example, I keep hearing this example over and over, is the building inspector example. And this is what's going to happen when entire cities are covered with some sort of wireless data. And I know some are now. There's certainly cellular data networks that cover entire cities with, you know, relatively low speeds compared to what even the cellular networks will be in a year, and what mobile WiMAX will be in 2 years, and so forth. But, you know, so I'm a building inspector. I'm wandering around, and all I need is a tablet PC, or maybe I only need like a handheld or a smartphone, some kind of small device. And I go into building, and I tap some keys. If we have this location awareness built in to the mesh, then I don't even have to tap keys. I hit the button. Hey, I'm here, and it says, okay, you're at this location. We know exactly where you are. Here's the building data for the building you're in, and here's the form you fill out. You check these numbers. You take some pictures on the device. It uploads it, and there's this expectation there'll be massive improvement in efficiency. And that's, of course, building inspectors. There's, you know, probably tens of thousands of building inspectors in the U.S. alone. So you've got one category.
I think it's a great example. We've seen that, for example, in Cleveland, Ohio. They're doing this in part of the One Cleveland project. So there's two things I'd give you to pause on this one. One is that you'll have multiple networks available to take advantage of. Right. I mean, I look, you know, we're in the Wi-Fi business and I love Wi-Fi, but, you know, we recognize there's going to be a lot of other wireless network alternatives. I think what you're going to find out is that you're going to have very smart devices and they'll be able to move across these networks and make decisions based on where you are or based on your security credentials and those kinds of things, how to get connected. But the important part is, I think you mentioned, is that the network knows who you are. And so, you know, because you have kind of a secure software client on this device, you will be able to then, you know, you'll be able to get authenticated. You'll be able to get, you know, into the database, and the database will, you know, based on your identity credentials, will bring you this information. And that's a really different kind of thought for a lot of Wi-Fi networking in particular, right? The idea of identity. It very, very personalizes what you're able to do, and you may have different levels, right? So you may be, you know, a building inspector, for your example, on the network, and you're entitled to a certain level of information, but you may be a first responder, and that may bring you into a whole little different level of classification or a whole different level of quality of service.
Right, and
that's what's great about these networks is they're very flexible for provisioning an array of services based on who you are and the class of service and the security credentials you hold.
Well, and it's going to be these parameters that you're talking about are going to be different if you're just in an office. I'm working in a government building downtown and I have access, or even at several different government buildings that have shared common back-end authentication and policy management and all that, ideal case. And I go from building to building and I have my wireless access and so forth. But then once I can extend out of that, the applications have to change, don't they? That even partly because you're going to have these better identity and location provisions and presence provision, so your supervisors will be able to track you, or you'll be able to communicate better in groups, let's say, is a more positive spin on that too. So suddenly I can go throughout, you know, in some of these early proposals, let's say it's going to be downtown areas. I know there's a number of these underway, city center centers underway in the UK, where the cloud's going to unwire, 10 city centers there. Then you get to the idea, you know, hey, we'll have all the Philadelphia will be entirely unwired. And so we'll have workers who work for Philadelphia will have access throughout the majority of the area. Then you have things, and this is something Cisco is involved in bidding on, Smart Valley, the Silicon Valley bid, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and that's 1,500 square miles of Silicon Valley crossing many municipalities. Different counties. So applications have to reflect that too, don't they? When you have these larger and larger entities or areas to be covered with different entities, both personal, corporate, and municipal, how do applications change when you start to work on a scale of 1,000 square miles or an entire country like Singapore's attempting to do?
Well, there's two principles here that I would think about. One is the aesthetics of radio resource management actually don't change. And said simpler, right, you have to manage the spectrum as it's a scarce resource. So when you have a lot of networks overlapping, right, because you will have public and private networks in that kind of environment, seeing each other, the network has to adapt around, you know, changes in, whether it's contention for the frequency or interference or usage or, you know, load balancing, those kinds of things. So the networks have to be actually very smart, right, because at the end of the day, they are unlicensed networks and they are subject, you know, to other people being on them. And on some level, you need a very smart air traffic control system. The other thing to think about is that the clients and the devices that are going to attach to these networks are going to be very, very interesting. And the example that we've been talking to folks about is, you know, think about all these things you used to do manually that you can now do automatically. So, I mean, there will be Wi-Fi-enabled parking meters. Or there'll be Wi-Fi-enabled streetlights, and they will tell you, right, you know, when you're out of money. right? I mean, instead of just having, a meter person driving up the street waiting to see that, or it might, over time be able to allow you to see into that meter.
So the Wi-Fi, it'll communicate the
information. And then you can refill it remotely.
I can pull up my cell phone app, and it's connecting through some, common gateway back over Wi-Fi, so I can pay the system and I can use multiple modal things. I don't even have to have a Wi-Fi device, conceivably, if the application is designed to span the different networks that are available.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So, I mean, while there will be a lot of personal usage, meaning human beings connected to these mobile networks, I think there are also going to be just a whole lot of devices, right? Because they seem to make sense. And if you think about kind of the shared facilities, of a city, so I think so. Where you're gonna see smarter parking meters, and I mean the Metrocom company, and I work with the Metrocom guys at Airspace, right? They were all about meter reading. Mm-hmm. But, it was very proprietary and it was kind of expensive to do it. Now it's kind of cheap and it's free, right? It's just one more application loaded onto that network. And it's very accurate. And the interesting thing is you may find people logging back in and monitoring their energy usage based on time of day, right? And people will actually start to look at their meters.
Well, that's the idea of the smart grid. I mean, I've talked to broadband over power line folks about what they're doing in that mm-hmm. field, in which they're building a smart grid, which has a lot of applications on the power distribution side and efficiency, and then a fair number of future applications on the consumer side. But you can have a smart electrical grid, and it seems like you could have a smart wireless grid, and the two aren't, well, A, they're not mutually incompatible, and B, some of the benefits that you would that you're going to get from a smart electrical grid can accrue as long as the devices communicate. If I buy an air conditioner that has an extremely cheap Wi-Fi chip in it and it can communicate across a local standard. This is, Phil Bellinger, was he an Aeronet guy? I forget if he goes back.
Oh, no, I know Phil very well. Yes.
So
he was an Aeronet guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's from Aeronet. I mean, I know he was involved in the original 802.11b spec and so forth. And so, Phil wrote a white paper after he left Bel Air recently, another mesh networking company, about 802.11s, the mesh networking standard that's going through IEEE now. And he said, hey, the node-to-node, the sort of back-end plumbing part of it, that's neither here nor there. What it's about is 802.11s could provide a way so you could have all of these appliances, the kind of things you're talking about, these unattended automated devices talking to each other using mesh at their level to preserve scarce spectrum and resources and exchange the typically small amount of telemetry data they have while still taking advantage of a Wi-Fi network.
I think that's right. The only thing I would caution there is, right, because one of the challenges we've seen with mesh networks is, is the power output of actually the end user device.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, over time, people will tune that, right? Because, interestingly enough, power, right? I mean, Google guys talk about this, right? Dollars per megawatt, teraflop of data, right? Increasingly, power and networks are going to be highly interrelated. And obviously, what you really want to do is you want to have the network, the devices on the network and the actual network itself at the lowest power setting possible. So it doesn't interfere, but it is conceivable, over time that you can have just a whole lot of low power devices sending just very short bursts of data into the network. So the utilization of that network, we think about, 10, 15, 20, 30 people on an access point, but you may have 1,000 devices that are only intermittently transmitting.
Well, and if I buy an air conditioner and it's got a 20-cent 802.11b chip in it a couple of years in the future, when that's just a commodified radio element that's baked into other stuff, it's just a thing that's on there as part of the interface, and my air conditioner can send out, 50 bytes or something, whatever it needs to send, like, hey, I'm on, I'm at this temperature, here's what my compressor's saying, and it sends that every 30 seconds, every minute, whatever is needed for the network's operation, that seems like a pretty low impact. Or, I think the Silicon Valley issue, or I should say not exactly Silicon Valley, but the area around there where there's still farming. I know that, moisture monitors, this is a big issue up here in Eastern Washington, Eastern Oregon, being able to monitor soil conditions, weather conditions, extremely small amounts of data, which have, multi-billion dollar trickle-down effect.
No, very, very exciting stuff.
And that's part of the interest, I thought, that in the and when you start to get these large-scale networks, so we have these areas like there's particular interest in a city. So I know if I'm in San Mateo, I know they've been using, for instance, they've had a Wi-Fi mesh-based public safety network for some time that they've used. But when I expand out of San Mateo and I go to the area around there and I'm out in rural areas or countryside, there's going to be different purposes. I'll still want coverage. I'll want seamless, ubiquitous coverage, but I'm not going to be loading the network as much, right? But I'm still going to have this seamless network available to me everywhere I go in the county or whatever the region is that defines that.
I'm blanking on that one, Clyde.
Oh, the San Mateo. Well, I'm just thinking. Oh, it's not a particular proposal. I mean, San Mateo is just one example. But any city where there'll be urban applications, there might be suburban applications, and there's going to be rural applications. But a network's going to be built that's going to cover an entire metropolitan area, let's say, or even beyond the metropolitan area into the county. You know, I think about in Michigan, there's some early mobile WiMAX work going on, a test project up there in a county that I think is 1,200 square miles. They're currently having trouble getting the rights of way for utility poles from the utility that's not involved in the test project. It's a whole other issue. But they have a, you know, they've got a largely rural population. They've got a spread out set of resources that are used by municipal employees, and they need, and even when those are really low bandwidth applications, there's not really an alternative when they're out in the field in order to get that data instead of going back to an office.
Yeah, I think, and part of that here is that I think we're going to see a lot of kind of complementary technologies, right? One of the emerging models here is that you use Wi-Fi for distribution, and because of the ubiquity of Wi-Fi clients, right? And but you may actually have WiMAX as a backhaul technology, in some of these environments, because I think, when you really start to look at the rural environment, right, the economics, I mean, I think in a citywide environment and doing a metropolitan area, Wi-Fi economics actually work really well. When you look at a very rural, remote area, you may have some challenges, right? Backhauling over that physical distance. I mean, a rural area could be 20 square, 30, 40, 50 square miles.
Right, and your
So I don't think
distribution
you'd
could be very
always.
thin. I mean, you could have a very thin distribution layer, but right, you want it. Well, and right, and I think the Wi-Fi mesh, this is what seems to be evolving with all the manufacturers of mesh equipment or metro scale Wi-Fi gear, is that the backhaul options seem to be getting more and more, I don't want to say baroque, but they are getting more and more detailed as actual deployments go out in the field and customers are asking for specific features, or there's real world testing. It's like, well, Wi-Fi, point to point Wi-Fi makes no sense here. We should just deploy pre-WiMAX or WiMAX.
WiMAX or even EVDO, right? You're going to see a lot of strange bedfellows, right? And I think, what's going to happen is the kind of practicality is going to kind of come to the forefront for this, right? So you may not have enough easy alternatives on the access side. And so you may see pure alternatives like pure Wi-Fi, or you may see pure EVDO, or you might see pure WiMAX, or you may see some combinations. Really depending on the area and really the applications that people are using.
Well, this
So
is
you
a
may have,
question
for
too
example, like
about.
we talk about,
I'm sorry.
it's easier to do location, for example, on Wi-Fi than it is to do it on WiMAX today. So based on that application, Wi-Fi might be the access technology, but WiMAX would be the backhaul technology.
Well, and this is a question too, is with all the Wi-Fi networks being built, the metro scale networks, and we already have EVDO in a lot of the US and UMTS and HSDPA starting to penetrate the rest of the world.
A lot of acronyms,
Yeah, a lot of, yeah, I know it's the proliferation of TLAs, of three-letter acronyms worldwide,
Right.
even though most of them are 4 and 5 letters now, because there's just not enough letters to represent the what's going on in the technology. But so we'll have third generation cellular networks. We'll have whatever the fourth generation is, which looks like now it's going to be, in the U.S. we'll have at least a couple providers of mobile WiMAX for about a third of the country's population, not slightly overlapping. We'll have Verizon and Singular have said they're going to go with IMS for their next generation, in terms of putting IP in their cellular backbone. So IP is going to be everywhere. And so it means I'm going to walk into a city, I'm going to go to San Francisco, and there's going to be a Earthlink run Wi-Fi network available 95% of the city and maybe all the outdoor areas. There's going to be this WiMAX network from Sprint. There's going to be a WiMAX network maybe from Clearwire if they get a license. There'll be multiple other cellular networks. There might be other flavors that I don't even, that aren't even on the radar right now, but could be out. How does that affect how mobility works, how applications work? Does this affect the end users? Does it affect the kind of things that are being written when you'll have many different speeds and prices of networks overlapping in the same place? Some licensed with guaranteed quality of service, some
Well, I think
unlicensed.
there's two alternatives that may kind of emerge here. One is you may see kind of a form of least cost routing, right? That the device may default to what is the least expensive network, right? Depending on how the services provision and the intelligence, of the device. So, it'll say, okay, if I can default to the Wi-Fi network, right, which is a public access network and it's free, I will do it. Right, and I can go up through a series of alternatives, based on a certain quality of service or amount of bandwidth available, et cetera. And so I think what's the interesting thing is that actually the device itself is going to play a very, very important role. in that. It can't just be the network making decisions, but the network and the device tandem have to do that. The other one is, I think you'll see, like what we see in every kind of networking industry, is that there'll be a lot of alternatives early on, and then there will be fewer alternatives over time. Right? That's kind of some of the natural economics of this start to come to the forefront.
Right, I see. You got there's an expansion of alternatives for a while as the market settles out, and then there are fewer and fewer as the
Well, I mean, I think there are kind of a network economics effect, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen it in telephony, we've seen it in airlines, you know, we've seen it in ISPs, right? We've seen this in a lot of marketplaces because the barriers to getting into the market aren't long, but the long term sustainability is the is the issues, right? And I think one of the reasons why I think a lot of the Wi-Fi mesh networks have been very compelling is they offer themselves off for some very interesting and shared economics, right? So where, you know, a Wi-Fi network could be a public access network for internet access, but because it can also be shared by first responders or municipal networks. There's a lot of people to kind of pull that together, right? And I mean, we don't build a phone network to connect to you and I. We build a phone network to connect, you know, hundreds of millions of people. And you design it around, you know, peak busy hour, right? And I mean, if you think about kind of the traditional switching changes, obviously, mm-hmm. with IP, but you base it around a certain network effect when the economics of that network cut over. So the question is going to be who's going to win the race to building the traffic and building the network economics.
Right, but there could be multiple winners for different kinds of applications too, right? Because they'll be licensed and unlicensed, and there'll be multiple flavors of license. So there may be natural advantages to different parts of that based on spectrum characteristics or device characteristics too, right?
Correct, absolutely. I would agree completely on that.
That's interesting. Well, you know, I was having a conversation earlier today in podcast number 16 with Anurag Lal of iPass, a hotspot aggregator or an access mm-hmm. aggregator. And when I said to him, you know, hey, so, you know, big chunk of their business still dial-up, although a rapid transition to broadband revenue. And I said, are we going to have dial-up lines in the future? And, you know, and we talked about that for a bit, when that might phase out. And I'd ask you sort of a related question is there going to be a point when you look at network economics, is there going to be a point when copper wire is carrying anything but, say, DSL or some other form of network? Is wireless going to be so pervasive and cheap that phone, that voice, is really going to be a wireless-only application, and we're going to use copper to pull in high bandwidth or do voice over IP over high bandwidth service?
I think, you know, there's always the James Bond analogy, right, which is never say never. So there will be people who just pick up phones, right, for their entire life. And I think what's going to happen is the concept of mobility is going to displace the concept of wireless or wired. Mm. And the applications you use, so for example, if unified communications are kind of your key type of, you know, if you're more tech-centric versus more voice-centric, or you are somebody who doesn't move around a lot versus somebody who moves around all the time, that will dictate kind of how those networks roll out and how traffic, you know, moves on that. I mean, clearly wireless will become a more primary access medium for getting onto the network.
Mm-hmm.
But depending if it's a free, why, as you point out, if it's a free network and, you know, the ability to support voice over it, right, in a shared environment, not in an enterprise environment, that may have some challenges, and that will still, you know, leave people using cell phones or wired phones. But, you know, over time, all these things tend to get better and better as people optimize around that. So I think, you know, if you'd say, you know, if you look at the uptake of cell phones versus wired phones, right, so wired phone counts are going down, cell phone counts are going up. I mean, I think we already have some indicators, right, that are suggesting that they will play increasingly important roles. But, you know, wired going away, probably not anytime soon.
Well, and I wouldn't say wired, more like wireline. But I guess that's the interesting distinction, right? It's wireline phone service qua wireline phone service, where you're using a pair to deliver a 64K circuit, you know, or equivalent mm-hmm. analog circuit. Seems like that could disappear in the same way that digital TV may supersede analog and people have to get an adapter. Or I just saw this great product.
I mean, we will see that driving, right? I mean, right. I mean, I think people will, you know, increasingly not use, you know, twist and pair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Copper for calls, if, you know, particularly if the mobile phone becomes their primary phone.
Right.
I mean, if you're trying to reach me, you can call my desk phone, but the real way to get me is to call my cell phone.
right.
And then over time, you're going to call my dual mode cell phone. And what you're really going to be calling is some device I'm carrying that has a telephony interface.
Right. I'm really going to call Alan Cohen.
Or you might just Skype me.
I'm going to call Alan Cohen at Cisco, and it's going to figure out the ideal method based on your presence and your parameters for your quasi telephony interface. Well, you know, actually, as you talk about this sort of the mobility replacing the idea of wired and wireless, it makes me think too, and I'm sure this is talked about inside companies and industry all the time, but when ultra wideband finally reaches it to the market and things like near field communication and some other things where you can have very high speed, I mean, ultra wideband probably the best of these, because even at, you know, conceivably 10 to 30 meters, you could have 100 megabits per second or better in some of the first generation gear that's being discussed. And it's not a good, you know, wide area network. It's got a lot of very specific limitations. But I think, gosh, if I have a device where it's affordable to have a UWB radio in it and Wi-Fi and WiMAX and cell, and that's inevitable that it will be affordable when you have all those radios in one device, my laptop or handheld. As I walk around, if we have the cheapest available thing and I walk into an area that's got fiber optic backbone and they've got a UWB system set up and there's some authentication now over UWB that's different than what's here today, my device could suddenly switch and have a 100 megabit per second connection to a wired connection using the shortest possible, you know, wireless link, the shortest, fastest link. So it seems like I don't even have to, I mean, right now, the way that Wi-Fi is a link typically to ultimately to a wired or a fiber backbone someplace. In the future, you're saying mobility is my application. So I don't really care, but the network could essentially adapt too, so that whatever the backhaul is, however it's shipped to me, I'm going to get the fastest or the best priced or whatever my parameters are as I walk around.
Yeah, I absolutely think that is coming. I do think that, you know, you will take advantage of it. And same way that, you know, I mean, effectively, what you may find out is over time is that you have kind of like video busy signal, right? Mm-hmm. If you're trying to transmit video and you're in an environment that can't support a network, which is, hey, can't do that, right? That's equivalent of calling mom on Mother's Day on the phone network. Right, in the old days anyway, used to be more hit or miss. So, you know, we may see kind of a return to that scenario over time until some of these things tend to get straightened out. But I think, you know, you will have the ability to take advantage of multiple networks. And what, you know, what will be important is making that experience very transparent, I'm sorry, very invisible to the actual end user.
So when when I try to flush my toilet during a commercial break at the Super Bowl, the wireless connection on the toilet is going to flash and say, please try to flush again later. The network is busy. Maybe not. That might be the wrong appliance to attach to.
I won't see that in our advertising campaign anytime soon.
Let's hope you can keep the tone at a higher level than that. But I just think about there's communications of all kinds and there's efficiencies. Hey, Mike, you know, it was always the joke that, you know, such and such might crash, but at least your television doesn't crash. And of course, now that I'm using a digital video recorder, of course my television crashes. I get blue screens on my TV. So maybe we'll have wireless networks on our toilets. I hope not. But we'll certainly have more and more applications that take the benefit of that accrue from having a pervasive network access.
Correct.
Well, thank you for this wide-ranging discussion about, I'm particularly interested in the applications as always. It's great to talk about what things people might use these larger scale networks for. And I have been talking with Alan Cohen from Cisco, the Senior Director of Mobility Solutions, who is paid to think about and talk to companies about how these, the next generation of devices, and in fact, I guess the current generation of devices and technology applications work together. Thank you for your time.
That always a pleasure.
Well, this has been podcast number 17, recorded on August 29th, 2006. This is Glenn Fleischman, the editor of Wi-Fi Networking News.